Welcome back to Two Sisters and a TV, the classic TV podcast, where we remember and celebrate all things and everything classic TV. Today we're going to continue and conclude our look at the life of Bob Crane. We left off last time, we talked about how Patty, Bob's second wife, Patty Olson, filed for divorce in December of 1977. And how Bob was devastated by the fact of their marriage coming to an end. Well, I read a couple of different books. I've read so many books down through the years and all, you know, kinds of articles and the like, that Patty would not allow Bob to see Scotty. Scotty was 6 years old at the time. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I remember reading that Patty wouldn't let Bob see Scotty. And then I read somewhere else that Scotty didn't want to see Bob. And then I read someplace else, maybe in the same place, that Scotty was, this was in the Graysmith book, I believe, this part, that Scotty was writing bad words on the walls in crayon at home about Bob. So now I don't know what's true. I know that the Graysmith book, I found out, I guess maybe a couple of years ago, that there are inaccuracies within it. Whether that's one of them or not, I'm not sure. But I do know that by 1978, as Bob was preparing for his 50th birthday, he began to kind of take stock of his life. He started kind of looking at his life, and I definitely can relate to that. Been there. Turning 50 is a very personal milestone in anyone's life. You start looking at where you've been, what you've done, where you want to go, what you want to do, where you are now. And Bob was no exception to that. And he was excited about turning 50. He was always a very upbeat optimist anyway. So turning 50 was not something that he was dreading, but he did begin to look at where he was in life. And no doubt he did not want his relationship with Scotty to be negatively affected. Bob was a great father, and he loved all of his kids, and he had a great relationship with each one of them, and he definitely did not want that to be hampered in regard to Scotty. So it was a pretty contentious divorce battle between Bob and Patty. A lot of arguing, a lot of fighting, from what I've read. But actually, I think that it was during this period of time when he began to kind of look at certain parts of his life and see what needed to be fixed and what needed to be changed. And one of those things was definitely his career. He wanted to have a career again, a career not just doing dinner theater, but he wanted to be on TV again. He wanted to have his career intact again. And he was all about making changes in his life. That's one thing that his eldest son Bobby said that he told him, because after Bob and Patty separated, Bob moved out, got his own apartment, and he asked Bobby to move in with him. So the two were roommates. Bob and Bobby, not only father and son, but very close friends, and they really enjoyed being roommates. So he told Bobby often that he was looking at making changes in his life. He also saw Warner Klemperer again during this period, and he told him the same thing, that he was about making changes. That's what his main focus was, making changes. And one of those changes definitely involved John Carpenter. Bob and Carpenter had been running around and picking up women for years and taking pictures and videos. And although Bob was still addicted to doing that, he began to kind of realize that maybe that's something that he needed to kind of begin to start to let go of. Because it was in 1978 when Bob ended up in Scottsdale. He ended up in Arizona with beginner's luck. And he was staying at the Winfield Place Apartments because he was working at the Windmill Dinner Theater. And it was there that he met a minister by the name of Ed Beck. And he began to, you know, talk with him a lot about his life, including the addiction. And it kind of seemed like, this is kind of my own conclusion, it kind of seemed as though maybe they came to the conclusion that for Bob to be able to overcome this addiction successfully, that he was going to have to go ahead and remove Carpenter from the equation. And that's what Bob kind of began to do. I mean, they had been thick as thieves for years. And all of a sudden, Bob began to see Carpenter as being a nuisance and a pain in the butt, in the way. And he began to kind of distance himself from Carpenter a little bit. For example, when Carpenter went to Arizona, to Scottsdale, to meet up with Bob like he had always done, you know, go meet up with Bob, whatever city he was in, he'd go meet up with him and stay with him. Well, this time Bob did not want Carpenter to stay with him, so he booked him a hotel around the corner. Of course, this was something that Carpenter found very peculiar because he always stayed with Bob. And so by that June the 28th, as a matter of fact, Bob and Carpenter went out to dinner, and they were seen by others in the restaurant as being in a very heated discussion. It was very a very intense discussion. They were trying to keep it low because they didn't want to draw attention to them, to themselves. But other, you know, people in the restaurant, those who worked there, those who were dining there, noticed that they were definitely having a disagreement. And Carpenter reportedly looked very upset, looked very hurt. The two had dates for the night. They each had a woman that they were meeting later that night, so they met up with the women, and then they went their separate ways. Both struck out with their dates. Carpenter struck out with his. Bob struck out with his. So Bob went back to his apartment. Carpenter went back to his hotel room. Now, reportedly, Carpenter called Bob from his hotel room, and he was the last person that Bob spoke with. Now, Bob and Patty had spoken earlier, and they'd had a huge argument because, according to neighbors, they heard Bob yelling really loudly, and they could tell that it was he and Patty who were talking. So Bob went to bed. It was somewhere between the hours on June the 29th, 1978, between the hours of 3 and 5 a.m. that morning, Bob Crane was murdered in his sleep. He was bludgeoned to death. He had been hit twice in the head with a heavy, blunt object of some sort. Both blows caused irreparable brain damage and crushed his skull. He died instantly. He was just 2 weeks shy of his 50th birthday. Whoever the killer was also took an electrical cord and wrapped it around Bob's neck to strangle him. They wanted to make sure he was dead. So they strangled him with the electrical cord and they tied it in a bow at the back of his neck. It was a very, very brutal, horrific, really nasty, diabolical murder. There was blood and brain matter all over the walls, all over the bed. The pillow was drenched in blood. And whoever the killer was took one of Bob's tripods, one of his camera tripods. It has always been assumed that the murder weapon was that tripod that was missing. Also missing from Bob's apartment, his scrapbook, his Arizona scrapbook, the pictures he'd taken of women he'd met in Arizona, that too was missing. Someone had wiped the murderer had wiped the murder weapon on the bed, on the sheet of the bed, because there were two marks on the bed from the murder weapon, and then they let themselves out of the apartment. Now, one thing that my sister pointed out to me was that he couldn't even defend himself. He didn't stand a chance because he was asleep. Whoever was in that apartment with Bob Crane that night was someone that he trusted, someone that he felt relaxed enough around, comfortable enough with, to where he could go to sleep. Bob was known as being a very light sleeper. And so whoever was in there was someone that he knew and someone that he trusted. And like my sister pointed out, he could not even defend himself because he was asleep when he was killed. Very, very brutal, horrific thing to do to someone, to kill them as they sleep. Unbelievable, unbelievable the way that he died. And it was several hours later, around probably noon or so, but later that afternoon, Victoria Berry, his co-star, one of his co-stars from Beginner's Luck, as well as a personal friend of his, and yes, they were also sexually involved, went to meet, went to go and find Bob because they were supposed to meet at noon, but he didn't show up, didn't call, you know, nothing, which was very unlike him. So she went to his apartment, the door was unlocked, she let herself in, she was looking for Bob, and she's the one who found his body. The police were called, and the police, the Marx brothers might as well have handled the murder investigation because they completely botched it. I mean, very pertinent evidence they completely overlooked, they threw away, they discarded, they did not collect, they didn't seal off the crime scene. People were in the apartment for hours, drinking coffee, using the phone, just walking around, drinking beer. So the murder investigation was completely botched. Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona, they didn't even have a crime unit division. I mean, they barely had any crime in Scottsdale, and then they have this murder of a celebrity, and they just did not know how to handle it. So the crime scene was completely botched. And my sister asked me, did I remember when this happened? Because I'm Scotty's age, so I too was 7 years old when this happened. I don't remember it, however, because I did not know who Bob Crane was at the time. I no doubt heard about it in the news because it was a major, major news story across the country. And of course, in our house, we watched the news every single day without fail, both the national news and the local news. So I know I heard about Bob's murder, but I just don't remember it. Warner Klemperer was in Aspen. He just arrived and he got to the hotel. He turned on the TV and he found out about Bob's death. He said that he literally had a heart attack. Larry Hovis, who portrayed Carter on Hogan's Heroes, got a phone call from the National Enquirer informing him of Bob's death. He did say later that the reporter was gracious enough to give him the opportunity to be able to process the news before being able to give them a statement. Bob's murder was very, very shocking. It was really unbelievable what happened to him. And it's just always disturbed us, always been very disturbing to us, the way that he died. This was definitely a crime of passion. This was personal. This was a personal murder. The murderer had a vengeance, a very nasty vengeance against Bob to have killed him in this fashion, to have killed him, period. But in this particular fashion, they had a very strong grudge against him. Now, it's been, you know, there have been theories and there, you know, have been people with their ideas of who did kill Bob Crane. Some claim it was a jealous boyfriend or husband of one of his lovers, which that is possible. There are a lot of crazy boyfriends and husbands out there. Crazy jealous. Could have been an ex of one of his lovers. I do know, I remember reading that there was a lady, I believe in Dallas. Her boyfriend or her husband left a mutilated picture of Bob taped to her front door. And there was another guy, another boyfriend, husband of one of Bob's lovers. They had an argument, big argument, several months before Bob's death. So it is possible that maybe it was, like I said, a really crazy, jealous boyfriend, husband, or ex. It's also been claimed that the Nazis did it. Because, you know, Bob was on Hogan's Heroes all those years, making the Nazis look bad, making them look like buffoons and fools and clowns and incompetent. So some have claimed that the Nazis were behind Bob's murder. Bob was also in the midst of filming a new reality show called The Hawaiian Experience. Some claim that Bob mocked the Hawaiian gods, and so they're the ones who got even with him and killed him. And of course, there are those who, most people seem to think this, that John Henry Carpenter was the one who killed Bob. Because not only was Bob ending their friendship, but some claim that Carpenter had become very attracted to Bob. It was not a mutual attraction, but Bob, Carpenter, some claim that Carpenter enjoyed being with Bob even more than picking up the women, you know, and the sexual, you know, liaisons, that he enjoyed, you know, being with Bob, being in his company, and that the fact of losing that was just beyond devastating for him. Now, Carpenter did exhibit some very peculiar behavior after Bob's death. He called Bob's eldest son, Bobby, before Bobby even found out about Bob. He called him on the phone, made a very strange phone call to him. Hey, Bobby, you know, how you doing? How are things going? If you need anything, you know, let me know. I'm back in L.A. Because normally Bob would always drive John to the airport. You know, when they, you know, were in town together, Bob would always take him to the airport. This was even in Bob's appointment book, which was next to his bed, that John was leaving, along with his appointment with Victoria Berry. Those are two of the things in Bob's appointment book, which is next to the bed. But John decided to take himself to the airport. And so he was already, you know, long back in L.A. when word came down about Bob's murder. Then Carpenter later on called Bob's apartment. But the funny thing with that was he didn't ask to speak to Bob. And then when he found out that the police were in the apartment, he didn't even ask, well, the police, well, hey, what's going on? Is Bob okay? You know, what are you doing there? What happened? Very suspicious behavior. So anyway, the murder investigation was a cold case. It was basically closed out, and it was just an unsolved crime for years. Meanwhile, Bob's funeral took place on July 5th, 1978. Among those in attendance were Eddie Feldman, who was executive producer of Hogan's Heroes, Robert Clary, Larry Hovis, Carol O'Connor, Patty Duke and her husband, John Astin, Leon Askin, Eric Braden. Eric Braden, a lot of you probably best know him as having been Victor Newman on The Young and the Restless for the past 44 years. Bob and Eric Braden were brothers-in-law. Eric Braden was, and still is, married to Patty's sister, and so he was in attendance as well, and he was also one of the pallbearers. So, for years, as I said, Bob's murder was just filed away, just, you know, just completely, like I say, forgotten about. Then in 1994, 16 years later, the case had been, you know, reopened around 1990 or so, somewhere in the 90s. Interest had, you know, been re-energized, if you will, about the case and about the murder. And so in 1994, John Henry Carpenter was arrested and tried for the murder of Bob Crane. I don't remember how long the trial lasted, but he was acquitted of the murder. Now, there were some jurors who admitted after the fact that they thought that he did do it, that he was the murderer, but they said that the evidence was just not there. And of course, no, the evidence was not there because the Scottsdale Police Department botched the murder investigation so badly. Now, according to John Henry Carpenter's wife and others who knew him, the trial and everything took such of a huge, enormous toll on him. He was never the same. And 4 years later, in 1998, he died of a heart attack at the age of 70. So over 45 years later, Bob Crane's murder remains unsolved. It remains a very ugly and horrific and really nasty murder that still is unsolved. Let's take a quick look at Autofocus. Autofocus is a 2002 movie, a Paul Schrader movie about Bob Crane. It's not really about Bob Crane's life. It's basically about Bob's sexual addiction. That's really what the whole movie is about. We've both seen it. We first saw it probably around 2009, a long time ago. We were up late watching TV one night, and we saw a little advertisement at the bottom of the screen that said autofocus next. And so it was like 1 a.m. when it came on. So we watched it. It didn't go off to around 3:30 that morning. I remember at the end of the movie when Bob's murder was depicted, my sister got really emotional, really upset about that. As did I, because it was really devastating to see that enacted. Very, very sad. Now, I will say this about autofocus. The casting was on point. Greg Kinnear portrayed Bob, and he did a really good job of portraying Bob Crane. I do wish they would have had Bob's hair parted on the right side, though. That has always irked me about that movie. Bob parted his hair on the left side, not the right. So I never understood why that was, you know, done incorrectly. Willem Dafoe portrayed John Carpenter, and he was perfect in that part, in that role. Rita Wilson portrayed Bob's first wife, Anne. I do not remember the actress's name who portrayed Patty Olson. And everyone who's seen autofocus says that the gentleman who portrayed Werner Klemperer, I cannot remember his name, did an amazing job, which he did. By the way, speaking of Werner Klemperer, I remember reading a story years ago that during the Hogan's Heroes days, Werner Klemperer had a really fancy car. And he would drive the car to the set, and Bob would make fun of the car. He would not make fun of it, but he would, you know, joke with him about the car, how fancy it was. I can't remember the brand or anything like that. But he would, you know, laugh about the car and make jokes and stuff like that. And so after Bob's death, he sold the car because he said it was just too difficult to look at the car. But back to autofocus, the casting was very good. The casting was really, really good. Also, I must say that they captured the 70s and 80s very, very well. They really captured those two decades and those two time periods very well. But autofocus is just so one-dimensional. I mean, all it focuses on is Bob being a sex addict and his relationship with Carpenter. That's all it really focuses on. In the beginning, you do see him married to Anne and you see the kids. You see that Bob was, he was a church-going family man and was pretty much on the straight and narrow. And then after he gets Hogan's Heroes, he begins to pretty much go astray. But I mean, that's all that they really focus on throughout the rest of the movie is, like I said, the addiction. So it's, again, very one-dimensional. Bob's eldest son, Bobby, is actually, he was a consultant on the movie, and he has a bit part in it. He portrays a reporter who interviews Bob Crane. And he also let Greg Kinnear use Bob's jacket in the movie, his Hogan's Heroes jacket, because after Bob's death, Patty gave Bobby the jacket. And he let Greg Kinnear use it in the film during the Hogan's Heroes scenes. But Paul Schrader admitted he was not trying to do the Bob Crane story. He admitted that he was just fascinated by the fact that he was a sex addict, and he wanted a really juicy movie based upon that alone. That's why it's so one-dimensional. You don't see anything else about Bob's career, about Bob's family, other friends he had, his other relationships. It's all about the addiction and Carpy. That's really all that you see. But if you want to check it out, it's available on DVD. I'm sure you can stream it somewhere. I've never seen it before. I don't think I want to see it again, to be honest. I know my sister does not. But Bob, by the way, Patty Olson, his second wife, passed away in 2007 at the age of 72. And it was before her passing, shortly around the time of autofocus's debut. She moved Bob's body. He was originally buried in Chatsworth, California. She moved him to the Westwood Cemetery, and they are buried next to each other. And she did this secretly, didn't tell anyone she was doing it. Caught everyone off guard. Everyone, was definitely, surprised by her decision. But they are buried together in the Westwood Cemetery. And interestingly enough, Richard Dawson is buried nearby. It's a very small cemetery, very elite, very prestigious. They are Bob Crane, along with Patty and Richard Dawson, are all near one another. Now, there are some really good books you want to check out more about Bob Crane, find out more about him. We definitely recommend the definitive biography. that's the best way to find out all about Bob Crane, not just, you know, the sexual addiction and Carpenter and his murder. We definitely recommend that book. Also, Bobby wrote a book. Bobby wrote a book titled Crane, Sex, Celebrity, and My Father's Murder. It's by Robert Crane. This book we recommend really, really emphatically because it has an edge over all the other books about Bob because it's written by his son. And you get to find out about Bob as a father. You get to see him from that perspective, which is very, very unique. So we definitely recommend Bobby's book. Also, there's another book by the journalist John Hook, Who Killed Bob Crane? It's solely about the murder. It's a very good book. It's very easy to read and follow along with. There's also The Murder of Bob Crane by Robert Graysmith. That's the book that I have. Lots of interesting facts in there, despite it has been known for having inaccuracies within it. You know, if you want to check it out, you know, it's available. Very easy to find. Also, Bob Crane, Hollywood's Unsolved Murder by Jamie Benton. Now, that one's hard to find. I haven't even tracked that one down. But I've heard from the reviews that it, too, is a good read if you want to read specifically about Bob's murder. And then there's The Hogan's Heroes, the unofficial companion book by Brenda Scott Royce. Great book about the series. And it's out of print. It's hard to find. When you do find it, it's very expensive, but it is a really good book. I got my copy long time ago, back in around 2001. But since we've been doing this podcast, this is the first time we have ever had a topic, a subject, where we broke it down into three separate episodes. So why Bob Crane? Well, number one, there was a lot to talk about. No wonder the definitive biography is over 600 pages. There is a lot to talk about in regard to Bob, especially if you want to do a really thorough look at his life and who he was as a person. And if you want to go into, like I said, the dark stuff about him, there's a lot to cover. And we didn't want to rush through it. And then next of all, Bob Crane has left an indelible mark within classic TV history. That is definitely a given. But we wanted to do this episode and take our time with it. And yes, we did break it down into three parts because we wanted to show Bob Crane some respect and some love and some honor because he doesn't get that much. Since Bob Crane's murder, he has been reduced to a joke, a punchline, a laughing stock. Someone that people, even within the industry of both radio and television and film, turn their nose up at, sneer at, dismiss. Someone that he's someone that they criticize, look down upon. I have read horrific, absolutely terrible comments, articles about Bob Crane through the years. I've seen podcasts about Bob where they're laughing and making jokes and making fun. And I just turned it off. I couldn't stand anymore. Now, I have also read books and articles about Bob that have been respectful, thankfully. Listened to a couple of podcasts recently where Bob was treated with respect. I remember reading a comment when I was doing some last minute research where there was a gentleman on YouTube. And I remember that he said, you know, this guy really had a lot of talent. It's sad that all they want to focus on are his final days. And that's true. That's all a lot of people want to look at is about Bob's murder, about, you know, who did it, and the addiction. But he was so much more than that. That was just one facet of Bob's life. And it was a facet of his life that he was trying to get help with. He was trying to overcome the addiction. He was in counseling. He did try to cut off from Carpenter. He was definitely working on that. And I think that he deserves a lot more credit than what he receives. So that's why we want to do this episode about him, and that's why it is so thorough, and that's why, like I said, it was divided into three separate episodes, because we adore Bob Crane. We love the way that his eyes would crinkle up when he would smile. He was a very funny guy, very talented, very good-hearted, great father, really funny comedian. And it's just unfortunate that people can't see past the addiction. They can't see past the fact that he was murdered. And they can't see past that negative side of Bob. For example, Bob should have been in the Radio Hall of Fame years ago. Now, the authors of the definitive biography have been working tirelessly for years to get Bob inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. But he has yet to be inducted. Now, we've nominated him a couple of times. I went and did so just a couple of weeks ago. Again, with the Radio Hall of Fame, oh, we can't have him in here. Oh, he was a sex addict. Oh, he did this and that and this and that. So do you know how many celebrities out there have dark sides to them? I'm not even going to go. That could be an episode itself, one that I don't think that we're going to do. But that could be an episode within itself. All of the celebrities out there with dark sides that are in the Radio Hall of Fame, that have stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, that are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That doesn't apply to Bob, of course. But I'm just saying, why is Bob treated so differently? Why is he looked down upon so much? It's unfair. And it's unfair to those that he left behind. It's unfair to his kids. It was unfair to his mother. His mother was still alive when he was murdered. It was unfair to his brother, Alfred. Unfair to those who knew him and who, like I said, were friends of his. Very unfair to Bob that he is, like I said, looked at in such of a negative light. So that is why we wanted to, like I say, show Bob some love, show him some respect. And it was an honor to be able to do this podcast, which was several months in the making, and be able to bring it to you in three parts. And on behalf of my sister and myself, I will say this, Bob, I really, really wish you would have been with us a lot longer. It would have been amazing to have seen what he would have done with his career. He already had signed up for 1978. He signed up to be a part of the TV movie Crash, which of course was about an airplane crash. Well, lots of airplane movies back in the 70s, you know. And he had signed up, you know, signed on to do Crash. He was very excited about that. He was very optimistic about turning 50. Very excited about what was coming and what he was going to do with the rest of his life. And it's just heartbreaking to know that he didn't get the opportunity to do any of what he would have done with his life. He could have had a talk show or another radio show. He would have definitely more than likely had that return to TV that he wanted so badly. There's so much that Bob could have done with his life. He could have had many more years with his children. That would have been wonderful to see. He would become a grandfather. I'm sure he would have married again, you know, and been a part of Hogan's Heroes reunions and, you know, autograph signings. He loved signing autographs and meeting fans. No, not just hot women to take to bed, but fans in general. And it just would have just, it's just unfortunate that his life was cut short and that his life ended in such a horrific, brutal way. But Bob, I will say this as I bring this episode to a close on behalf of my sister and myself and this podcast, Bob Crane, we love you. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Two Sisters in a TV, the classic TV podcast. We will have a brand new episode for you next week. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your time and your continued support. And we will see you all on the next episode.